Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all today. Happy to be here with you all on these trying times that we find ourselves in. Anyway, the Silk or Joe Show is brought to you by the Main Street Radio Network, so we want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist. Sometimes content will be disagreed with, but they have our backs nonetheless. We appreciate that. We also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. Main Street Radio Network can be found at mainstreetradionetwork.com. And you can also find the Al and Nathan Show up there as well, which I guest host sometimes, such as earlier this week. It was Tuesday that I guest hosted for them. So you can go check that out. You can also find past shows up there as well in podcast form. So if you missed me hosting on Tuesday, for example, eventually you'll go find it. The podcasts for Al and Nathan's show, they take a while to update for some reason. It's nothing that we're doing. It's just the way the internet works, as far as we can tell. I'm not a coding expert. I flunked out of that sort of program, but otherwise I wouldn't be here with you all today. I'd be out there. I'd probably be one of them crazy psychosocialists in Silicon Valley if I had any competence in computers. Anyway, though, so you can check us out on social media, speaking of those psychos, on Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, on Twitter at Main Street Radio, and on Getter, GETTR.com at Silk or Joe Show, which, as far as I know, Getter is not ran by the psychos. So that's a good thing. And then the Al and Nathan Show can be found at alandnathan.com, on Twitter at Al Nathan. And let's not forget Wimkin, W-I-M-K-I-N, again, another one that's not quite ran by psychos. That's and we can be found there under Main Street Radio Network. All right, there's some stuff to cover today. We finally saw, for example, earlier this week, what it would take for Democrats to agree with treating violent protesters with the strong police presence. Yeah, numbers have varied, actually. There's 150 to 300 pro-Hamas protesters outside the Democratic National Committee's office in Washington, D.C., and it's pretty close to congressional offices, so Capitol Police were there. You remember those nice people. They're the ones who fired into the crowd of peaceful demonstrators on January 6th and pretty much triggered the riot and then proceeded to beat an unconscious woman to death and shoot someone else to death. So, yeah, nice people. But they finally demonstrated to left-wing protesters that they won't tolerate violence toward their masters in the Democratic Party when these protesters, and they got pretty rowdy. And then the police, Capitol Police, started busting them down a bit. So far, we're not really seeing condemnation from the Democrat Party. Like, oh, Capitol Police, you are way out of hand here. In fact, I guess they're pretty happy about it, I suppose, because those protesters, gee whiz, they posed quite a threat to the Democrats. And I guess that's the only time where you really care about the actions of the police and how violent they can be and all that. You know, it's the only time you're allowing them to do that, when they threaten you. We've seen it before, though. You might recall that during the Black Lives Matter riots of 2020, it was always whenever the riot got close to the mayor or city council's neighborhoods that the police suddenly showed up or the National Guard suddenly were mobilized to help. It was never when they're terrorizing the average citizen. It's always when the rulers are in the crosshairs. Now, you might be wondering about that, though, because these Hamas lovers, that they're getting pretty violent. Why would they do that against their own masters in the Democrat Party? Because the Democrats have been quite good to them. Democrats are the ones who did not vote to censure Rashida Tlaib, the Democrat congresswoman from Michigan, who is best known for her vilely anti-Semitic statements, and apparently being part of a pro-Hamas Facebook group as well, and just carrying the water for Hamas. She has done everything she could, it seems, to help Hamas out. And then the Democrats also in the Senate, they voted to cut funding to Israel. So why would these Hamas protesters be going after the Democratic National Committee headquarters when Democrats have been on their side this whole time? That's a curious thing. I guess we'll see an answer unfold later on today, or maybe they just got carried away. Maybe thought it was the Republicans that they were protesting in front of. Who knows? But again, that's use of force apparently was acceptable for Democrats. And, you hear about the some of the Jewish Democrats, too, that were in quite a bit of danger out there. They had to be evacuated from the building by Capitol Police as these protesters lined up. So are they going to be the peaceful protesters? Is that what we're going to be, the media narrative now, like we heard during 2020? Or are they just going to be called insurrectionists? Well, not insurrectionists, because they weren't trying to storm the Capitol or anything, so insurrectionist is a sacred title for that. But are they just going to be called violent people now? Are they going to be called rioters, thugs, etc.? Or is the media going to just say this was a peaceful protest? Or maybe the media is just going to ignore the story, and you won't hear about it anywhere except here and on conservative news sources. So we'll have to see how this plays out, how the unequal treatment of violent left-wing protesters plays out. I sincerely doubt any of them are going to be in prison for 1,000 days, like conservative protesters have been from January 6th. And I don't think the Capitol Police are going to do what they have done for the January 6th protests and expand the area that was off limits for protests to include everywhere that you should, that normally you're legally allowed to be. Again, we don't know how this is going to play out at this time because it just happened this week and takes a while for this sort of stuff to matriculate. I guess it is a topic we will revisit. However, there's another topic I want to get to as well, and that is what happened out in Idaho. The Bureau of Land Management apparently had a beef with somebody who was homeless and just living in this area because that's all they could do. They could only live in that area. They were bankrupt, so they were just doing their best to survive, living off the grid. Bureau of Land Management didn't like that, and so take note, all you preppers and survivalists out there, what happened in this situation. So this man, he had been bankrupted by COVID pretty much. During that situation, he ended up without any money, and so after COVID, he's just living off the grid, I think in an abandoned bus it was. So, well, him, not just him, though, it's actually him and his family. So, homeless dude living on some land in Idaho, right? And the Bureau of Land Management comes along, and they wanted to arrest the man named Timber Roberts. So, they showed up, and two land management officers, they faked having some car trouble. They just said, hey, we're having trouble with our car. Could you come out and help us? And this guy, Timber Roberts, said, yeah, sure. And then he starts coming out, and that's when the two guys tackled him. And then he starts calling out for help. So his brother, Brooke Roberts, comes along, and he's in a wheelchair, mind you. He comes along yelling and pointing his finger, and he's shot 11 times for this trouble. So he had no gun, and he's in a wheelchair. But the Bureau of Land Management felt the need to film with lead anyway, because I guess wheelchaired people pointing at you are that big of a threat. Homeless wheelchair people are that big of a threat. Imagine the tactics that the Bureau of Land Management will go to, right? And this is just indicative of a sickness that's spread across the federal government, because we see this stuff going on all the time. ATF shooting people. Well, the ATF are well known for shooting people, killing pets during their raids on your house, whether it's dogs. Actually, it was some exotic animal the other day that they squashed. Some kind of rare bug or something that they stomped on or whatever. So ATF is pretty well known for their brutality. The FBI, earlier this year, they just shot and killed a dude because they felt like it. And then, of course, there's the FBI showing up with a SWAT team at the homes of peaceful protesters, who actually were peaceful protesters, indisputably, you know, weren't involved with January 6th at all, for example, just other people from other protests. Mark Halkus, who I'm referring to with this one. But then there's also the ones who showed the FBI raids on people who actually were at January 6th and weren't violent. But that's enough, apparently, just standing there on Capitol grounds for the FBI to show up with a SWAT team at your house and possibly kill you, because that's what's known to happen when these FBI raids happen. FBI have very, very weak triggers, apparently. Just the slightest little twitch and you're dead. At least that's how it looks. So now you have the Bureau of Land Management getting in on the act with this guy, with this homeless guy in a wheelchair. They're trying to remove this homeless encampment, I guess, which just really consists of two guys and a couple of members of their family. And that, you know, they come to the place, they fake damage to their car to lure the guy out. Then they tackle him. Then when he calls for help, they shoot a guy in a wheelchair who's coming out to help. And the Bureau of Land Management never at any point before the shooting identified themselves. They just said, we're two guys who have trouble with our car. They never said they were law enforcement. I think you're kind of supposed to do it, but it's not no-knock raid. Did they have a warrant for a no-knock raid? I don't think they got one. So I don't think the Bureau of Land Management actually is allowed to get them. You know, that seems to be more of a law enforcement thing than a Bureau of Land Management sort of thing. However, the point is, be on the lookout now, because apparently it's okay to not identify yourself, to say you're just having car trouble or some other lie to lure you out of a out of your home, at which point they'll tackle you, and if anyone shows up in a wheelchair half naked to help you, God help them, because they're going to get shot to death. Well, actually, no, this man survived. Somehow he managed to survive 11 bullet wounds, which is pretty impressive. So, God help that family, but God help the rest of us, too, because this is what our government has come to, happily shooting people in wheelchairs. And you're not going to hear about that story either on any other outlets, I'd imagine, because, again, it's about government tyranny under the Democrat Party, under the left-wing Marxists that control this country at this point. They have infiltrated the bureaucracy, and certainly their puppets in the media don't want you knowing anything about these atrocities. More Silk or Joe Show coming up after this break.
This report is sponsored by IBM. Customer service is now the top priority for CEOs when it comes to applying generative AI, leapfrogging other functions like research, innovation, marketing, and risk compliance. According to the IBM Institute for Business Value, 85% of CEOs expect generative AI to be interacting directly with customers by 2025. Piloting generative AI in customer service now can help accelerate a successful enterprise-wide rollout. Jennifer Quinlan, Global Managing Partner, Customer Transformation, IBM Consulting.
Everyone knows that today's modern consumer expects nothing less than a fast and uniquely personalized experience. Generative AI holds the potential to change the game in customer relationships by truly enabling businesses to deliver tailored recommendations, relevant answers, and extraordinary customer service.
How can businesses get started? Implementing generative AI tools to manage standard customer interactions can free up human agents to engage in more meaningful interactions, enhancing the overall customer experience. To learn more, visit ibm.com/IBV. What tech type am I? To help learners understand how their personalities and strengths translate into tech job roles, IBM has developed a quiz supporting ambitious learners to discover and explore STEM professions they may have thought were out of reach. This free, comprehensive, and practical online quiz uses AI to analyze learners' responses and identify specific job roles to consider, all in 5 minutes or less. Quiz results tell learners what tech professional type they are, and then curates a list of free IBM Skills Build courses and credentials to help get learners there. Lydia Logan, IBM VP, Global Education and Workforce Development.
The Tech Type Quiz is an engaging AI-powered assessment that can help learners envision themselves in a career in STEM. Through IBM Skills Build, we want to reach communities who are underrepresented in technology fields. We provide them with a customized learning path, free coursework, and the opportunity to earn digital credentials to help them on their journeys.
You can find the quiz at techtypequiz.com, sponsored by IBM.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids for multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give him a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve, it's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. So you might be put in an awkward position here with local businesses that when you find out that they support causes that you may not agree with. For example, who was funding that Hamas riot outside DNC headquarters? Well, pro-Hamas riot. It wasn't Hamas themselves, possibly. Well, if you found out some local business was supporting them, like during the whole Black Lives Matter riots of 2020, the alleged peaceful protest that set cities on fire, some of them had local business backings. Well, you know, on the one hand, you want to back local businesses, but on the other hand, you know, if they're just as bad as corporations. Joining us now to talk about this, we have Chris Weidener. He is founder of the Red Referral Network, and he was named one of the top 50 speakers in the world, also a member of the Motivational Speakers Hall of Fame. Chris Weidener, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
All right, glad to have you. So what do you make of this, you know, conundrum there? Because, you know, local businesses, on the one hand, they're easier to control, perhaps, with and boycott than a large corporation. But then on the other hand, what if you disagree with them as much as you disagree with the large corporation?
Yeah, absolutely. You are dead on in regard to that. It's easy for us to walk away from Nike and Amazon and Starbucks and Target, and we do, right? And brands like Bud Light and those kinds of things. But the vast majority of funding that goes to organizations and politicians is not the big companies. It's the average run-of-the-mill donation that gets paid to local politicians, state politicians. And this is the reason why Dinesh D'Souza and I have partnered to start the Red Referral Network. Because as one other podcaster put it, he said, giving your money to a Democrat-owned business who's then going to donate some to a politician who's going to stand up in the public square and tell everybody that you are a racist, homophobic, transphobic, sexist insurrectionist, that's like tipping your executioner. Thanks for killing me. Here's $100, right? And so I just decided personally, and then this is sort of the philosophy of the Red Referral Network, is why continue to give money to people who are going to use some of that money to destroy you? And I will never knowingly do business with a Democrat again until things shape up. And frankly, they started it, not us, right? Could you imagine a Republican 10 years ago saying, I just found out that my dry cleaner voted for Obama. I'm never taking my shirts back to that guy again. It's just really not in the nature of most conservatives or Republicans. But this is the day and age that we live in with the polarization. So no more money is going to be going to the left. And we're going to instead spend our money with people who share our beliefs and our values and those kinds of things. And, you know, if you think about it, and I'll kind of close with this, if you think about it, it's been happening in the religious world for a long time. Jewish people do it. Mormons do it. Seventh-day Adventists do it. Amish people do it. They'll do business with somebody outside of their system, but they always give the first shot to the people who believe as they do. And that's all we're talking about here is let's give our money to people who share our belief system.
Yeah, I was wondering kind of about the practicality about it, especially for people like me living in blue districts. I mean, the area, the voting district I live in is so blue. We only had, you know, I'm in Virginia, and we only had for state delegate and state senate one candidate, a Democrat. So,
Right. But the reality is I'm not going to walk into a restaurant and say, oh, can I talk to your owner before you seat us? I want to find out who he voted for. It's not that obnoxious, right? What we're doing with the Red Referral Network is we're building local groups. So where you would live, there would be a group of 20, 30, 40 conservative businesses. They meet together every single week. They meet, you know, breakfast time, lunchtime. They get in a room. They get to know each other. And then when they're out and about doing their business, and, you know, let's say that you're in a group with a real estate agent, and you're out and about, and somebody says, oh, we're selling our house. Do you know a real estate agent? I know exactly the real estate agent you should use. And you refer your conservative real estate agent from your local Red Referral Network. And so that's really the way that it works, right? So as we're out and about doing our business, and we hear of the need for people who are in our Red Referral Network group, we make that referral.
So then how does someone join the group? Is all this information just free on a website somewhere, or do you have to be one of these business leaders to be part of it?
Yep. All you have to do is go to redreferralnetwork.com. That's redreferralnetwork.com. Pre-registration is free. We're planning on launching these groups the first or second week of January. But right now we are taking pre-registration, and that'll put you into the email list. We'll let you know about the local groups that are being started all over the country. Everything on our website is driven by zip code. So the very first thing we just ask is your email and your zip code. That puts us into the system then where we're able to connect you with other local businesses who are owned by conservatives like you. So when we get to, 10 people, 20 people, 30 people in your zip code, we're going to start a group in that area. And you guys are going to end up being able to help each other drive business. And this is a model that has been done for 30 years. There's a very successful company called BNI, Business Networking International. They have, I think, 8,000 groups in America. And I think 2 years ago, the last statistics, they referred over $1.8 billion in referrals to one another. So these work. I mean, I know a real estate agent who got 17 referrals in 1 year, sold 17 houses in one of these networking groups. I know a roofer who makes over $100,000 a month roofing out of his referral group. So if anybody listening is in business or you own a business, you don't have to be the owner, but if you're in business and you're looking for a way to grow your business and you want to do business with other conservatives and have other conservatives refer to you, then the Red Referral Network is a great option. So just jump on over to redreferralnetwork.com, register, totally free, take you less than 90 seconds.
Yeah, so I guess the next logical step up from referring businesses is having a sort of like a LinkedIn sort of thing for job people who want jobs at these businesses.
Absolutely, yep. And every single person that joins will have a spot on our website where they can upload their logo, their location. And then what it'll do is as we're putting people into these groups and into our network, it will also create a network of a searchable network. So let's say, many of us, we have parents who are aging, right, and we might not live near them. And let's say they live, in my town where I live, Ooltewah, Tennessee, at the suburb of Chattanooga. My zip code is 37363. Let's say somebody's parents are moving to Ooltewah and they need a real estate agent. First thing they do, they go to the redreferralnetwork.com. They search that zip code and they go, look at that. There's a realtor right there in that zip code. And then you can call that realtor up and say, hey, my mom and dad are moving to your town. I'd love to connect you with them so that you could help them find a house. So the entire database will be searchable by zip code.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So was it hard to find the people to set this sort of website up? Because, I was mentioning in the last segment how, the folks who tend to be intelligent in tech also tend to be rather ignorant in politics.
Well, we are using the number one technology company in conservatism. They do technology build-outs. They do websites. They do email. In fact, they represent some of the biggest people in the conservative movement. I think the owner, who's a friend of mine, told me he's going to send 5 billion emails this year on behalf of his clients. So they're very big. It is an expensive build-out, believe me. A lot of people think that a website, you can get for a couple $1,000. We're putting a lot of money into it because we want it to work.
All right. Once again, we have about 20 seconds. What is the website?
RedReferralNetwork.com. There's a 3-minute overview video there, and then sign up will take you 90 seconds, totally free. RedReferralNetwork.com.
All right, Chris Widener, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe Show. Listeners, more coming up after this break.
The federal ban on menthol cigarettes could have unintended consequences for Hispanic communities. Here's United States Hispanic Business Council President Javier Palomares.
History has taught us that prohibitions just don't work. A federal ban on menthol cigarettes would hurt minority-owned small businesses. It would make communities of color more vulnerable to criminalization and bolster cartel pocketbooks. It's just simply bad policy, and it must be withdrawn.
Sponsored by the United States Hispanic Business Council.
Cyber criminals are getting more sophisticated in how they target everything from your personal information to our national security. The U.S. Army Reserve's elite cyber soldiers are on the front lines in the battle against international hacker networks and a host of threats from cyber crooks. Chief Warrant Officer 3, Jack Scott.
The best protection against cyber attacks is to stay vigilant. For beginners, avoid opening unsolicited emails or texts from unfamiliar people or groups, and refrain from clicking on any unknown links. Additionally, steer clear of using free public Wi-Fi for online shopping, checking bank accounts, or accessing sensitive information. Consider using a VPN to help keep your online activities protected. Check your privacy settings to make sure you have control of who can access your posts.
The U.S. Army Reserve has more than 120 career paths, including cyber specialized soldiers. For more, visit usar.army.mil.
This report is sponsored by IBM. Customer service is now the top priority for CEOs when it comes to applying generative AI, leapfrogging other functions like research, innovation, marketing, and risk compliance. According to the IBM Institute for Business Value, 85% of CEOs expect generative AI to be interacting directly with customers by 2025. Piloting generative AI in customer service now can help accelerate a successful enterprise-wide rollout. Jennifer Quinlan, Global Managing Partner, Customer Transformation, IBM Consulting.
Everyone knows that today's modern consumer expects nothing less than a fast and uniquely personalized experience. Generative AI holds the potential to change the game in customer relationships by truly enabling businesses to deliver tailored recommendations, relevant answers, and extraordinary customer service.
How can businesses get started? Implementing generative AI tools to manage standard customer interactions can free up human agents to engage in more meaningful interactions, enhancing the overall customer experience. To learn more, visit ibm.com/IBV.
The March of Dimes and HCA Healthcare are committed to the best possible start for every baby. I'm Amy Casseri, Vice President of HCA Women and Children's Services, where we have the honor of delivering over 200,000 babies a year. We partner with the March of Dimes on research and fundraising to help build a brighter future for babies everywhere. So march with us on one of the many HCA teams assembled nationwide. Learn more at marchforbabies.org/HCA.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny, when I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean, and there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. So when I filled in for Al and Nathan on Tuesday, there was a massive March for Israel that was going on. And in contrast to the Hamas riot, the pro-Hamas riot that happened at DNC headquarters, this was actually a very peaceful march with, I believe the number was, one number I saw was 100,000 people. So it was rather a terrific thing for that. And, you know, unlike at the Hamas rally with 10,000 people the week before, at the Israeli rally, they actually featured the national anthem. The only person who said Heil Hitler was appropriately a liberal counter-protester. While the massive crowd assembled, Senate Democrats voted to end aid to Israel, as I mentioned in the opening segment. And, you know, Israel is now fighting for survival and fighting terrorists trying to overthrow democracy, and Senate Democrats cut aid to them. At the same time, Senate Democrats want all the aid they can get sent to Zelensky, who just named himself president for life, taking their cues from the Jew-hating Democrats, apparently. Bus drivers at Dulles Airport left 900 of the pro-Israeli demonstrators behind at the airport. They don't want to drive them to the protest. I mean, it is Northern Virginia, and I can personally attest to rabid anti-Semitism in the area, having lived there myself for a little bit. And, I've actually heard some of the stuff that they've been saying and been out among the populations there. But, you know, seriously, in the countries a lot of the residents of that area are from, first generation immigrants at best, anti-Semitism is a natural course of life, and they see nothing wrong with it. And I'm not just talking about the Islamic folks, it's Asians and Hispanics too. I've heard it from everybody. That's just what you get from multiculturalism and telling people they should refuse to assimilate. They bring their bigotry over. And I suppose it's useful for Democrats. We've seen how they campaign on hate crimes committed by non-whites in their own cities by claiming it's white supremacy from red states, or by saying it's the people committing the hate crimes are white adjacent, or they're taking their cues from the white supremacist because they think that's how proper behavior is, or whatever. They come up with all sorts of excuses to explain away how whites are responsible for hate from other races. Huh. But speaking of hate from people, you'd be forgiven for thinking that out of the blue a Republican senator challenged a union leader to a fight on the Senate floor, because from what I read in an article by The Hill, they buried important context in the last quarter of their article, and I can only imagine other outlets eliminated that context entirely. So what we have here is Sean O'Brien. He's the general president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. He challenged Oklahoma Senator Mark Wayne Mullen to a fight on Twitter. Sean O'Brien called the senator a fraud and said, quote, "You know where to find me any place, any time, cowboy." And Mullen, he read those tweets back to O'Brien at a Senate hearing, and O'Brien said the challenge was still valid. So Senator Mullen proceeded to take him up on the offer until Senator Bernie Sanders, he was chairing the hearing, he interrupted and calmed things down. And the hearing was about, ironically enough, how unions improve lives and make everyone happy. But here we have this union guy who challenged the senator to a fight, and the senator was about to reciprocate. I guess that makes everyone happy. I don't know. I like a good fight sometimes. But just bizarre that this is allowed to go on, that actually this guy was allowed to threaten a senator and nothing happened to him. It's rather, because, you know, there are plenty of other people, right or left, when they threaten a senator, the police show up at their doors. Not this guy, though, apparently. And here you have The Hill spending three-quarters of their article making it sound like the senator was the antagonist here, threatening to beat a poor, innocent union dude who was just there at the hearing, piously observing his role in our great country, when suddenly this bully senator comes at him, when really it's the other way around. This union dude was the one who actually challenged the senator to a fight first. And now that they were face-to-face, the senator was trying to take him up on the offer, or at least seeing if he wanted it. The senator was trying to call his bluff, but the union man didn't seem to have been bluffing. Or maybe this was a game of chicken between the two of them. Either way, though, it's just indicative of our media, especially, how the story doesn't start with the union guy threatening the senator. Rather, the story is entirely about the senator threatening to fight the union guy and trying to make the Republican senator look like he's responsible. But that's, I guess, just par for the course from the media. This is the same media that takes in Hamas's talking points, and who will probably bury the story about the Hamas protesters trying to torch the Democratic National Committee headquarters. It's all just part of their narrative, and it's all their side doing it, so I guess really they don't want to risk taking responsibility for things getting so out of control under their watch, with people being fed the lies that they tell them, because a lot of those pro-Hamas demonstrators, they probably believe the lies about the hospital bombing that the media fed to them. So now if the media were to admit that those protesters got out of line, well, by their own logic and their own words, they are actually culpable for it. Because remember, they're saying the part of the reason they're going with some of these indictments against Trump are that they're saying Trump's words were what triggered the riots. Even if Trump didn't say, "Go riot," what the media and the left-wing narrative has been is that because Trump ginned up the crowd, because Trump said, "Hey, the election was stolen from you, that's bad," because he said these things, that was enough to make him culpable in the riots, because he gave them fuel for their anger. Rather than actually calling for the riot, he just merely told them reasons why a riot might be good without actually mentioning that a riot would be good. And that's been the left's hope to get him on some of these indictments. Heck, in Georgia, some of the indictments, using this logic, have him have it that telling people to watch a news source is a crime, you know? Having people watch a news channel, One America News, I think it was, they said that it was a crime for Trump to tell his supporters to watch that news outlet. And part of the reason, again, is that because at that news outlet, they would have seen material that made them angry and made them perhaps want to riot on January 6th, even if Trump didn't instruct them. That makes Trump culpable. That's how far they're trying to stretch in order to get him on this. So now the role is reversed. You have the media with all of its pro-Hamas narrative and all of its anti-Israeli sentiment. And we're not just talking the most recent stuff, though that is the most egregious because of what they're trying to cover up that Hamas did. But you have everything that they've covered up for Hamas in the past, too. And that's all coming to a head now. And you now have these violent demonstrators outside the DNC that the police needed to stop. Otherwise, they would have probably hurt a bunch of people. So media, they can't apply this logic that they apply against Trump to themselves, because then they'd be just as guilty. They were the ones who were telling these people the reasons they should have been rioting and tearing down the DNC. And as I pointed out in the opening segment, it is rather ironic because the Democrats are the ones who are the pro-Hamas party, cutting funding to Israel right in the middle of all of this. Yeah, that's a terrific move there. And you know, another thing that they do as well that I've pointed out in the show before, because you know, I mentioned that they're perfectly happy to fund Ukraine and Zelensky with his tyranny going on there in the name of saving democracy. You have to destroy it, I guess. But another thing that they do is they don't actually call out Ukrainian war crimes. They don't, you know, they keep saying, Israel, you have to moderate your response. Oh, Israel, you can't do this. Israel, you can't do that. Meanwhile, Ukraine just goes and butchers civilians and no one gives a darn. No one talks about cutting funding to them. No one talks about how it's atrocious. No one says anything about it. You don't hear about it when it happens. So that's just sort of the severe unequal treatment that Israel has been dealing with for its entire existence, I guess. Democrats, as far as they're concerned, Israel shouldn't exist. And these, so that's why, again, I'm perplexed at these pro-Hamas protesters that were trying to storm the headquarters of the Democrat Party. Why were they there? The party's been doing everything they could to help Hamas, not hurt them. In fact, the Biden administration was about to send $10 billion more to Iran, which would have been used to fund Hamas and fund Hezbollah. So they're trying to bite the hand that feeds them, basically, I guess. Maybe they're just ignorant, and so they're more confused that the Biden administration gives lip service to liking Israel when really they don't, when really they're entirely devoted to Israel's destruction. Maybe that's it. And they're just not quite getting the whole fine tightrope that the Democrat leadership has to walk between their goal of helping Hamas and keeping Jewish voters and Jewish congressmen on their side. Maybe the people are just, the pro-Hamas protesters are blind to that, or maybe they just don't care. Maybe they think there's more of us than them. They don't matter. Let's wipe them out the same way we want Israel wiped out. Could be that too. And as far, and if you're curious about who's funding these pro-Hamas groups, well, George Soros, he's got his finger in a few pies there as well. But apparently Code Pink, and Code Pink has a lot of backing from the Chinese Communist Party. So apparently, I guess now the Chinese government is funding these basically terrorists after this DNC rally. Wonder how much money ended up coming from the Chinese government to fund that particular protest that got violent. We'll never know, because half our politicians are on the Chinese payroll anyway. It was kind of interesting. There was this meeting in San Francisco with China. I mentioned this on the Alan Nathan Show as well, where the leadership of California, Gavin Newsom, the governor out there, Democrat, he had the streets of San Francisco cleaned up specifically for the chairman of the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, when he came to visit. That, and he acknowledged, Newsom admitted, the only reason the streets were made safe for those days wasn't because he cared about the citizens, it's because he cared about looking good to the Chinese. And then while over there, Joe Biden, he was at the meeting too, and Joe Biden apparently hinted at endorsing Gavin Newsom for president, perhaps if not now, in 4 years. And Newsom, he's willing to roll out the red carpet, so to speak, for the Chinese Communist Party, and run it right on over all the people that he's refusing to help that he's supposed to govern. I'm pretty sure that means he's after the Chinese big bucks. He doesn't care about the citizens. And how many politicians are like that? Actually, Peter Schweizer, he wrote about all the money that Biden got from China. And it's just alarming that we have our government controlled by them. Actually, the Biden administration has hinted that they want to do shared military exercises with China. You know, I guess so that China knows what we'll do if they invade Taiwan? Is that what the goal is? To just give away our strategy to them and let them know our weaknesses in advance? That way it's a much quicker bloodbath? they accused Trump of treason just because he said nice things about Putin. But here you have Joe Biden handing away the keys to the kingdom. On top of that, members of the Biden administration want to give Russia and China our nuclear secrets. They want to take them to a facility for where we develop nuclear weapons. Show it off to them. But I guess that's not treason any more than the Hamas riot was a peaceful protest. More Silver Joe Show after this break.
Get a jump start on your holiday shopping with Meta. For the loved ones on your list, consider the Meta Quest 3 next generation headset that brings mixed reality into the mainstream in vibrant full color resolution. Quest 3 allows virtual elements to blend with your physical surroundings. Experience front row seats at a basketball game, turn the dining room table into a virtual piano, or work out on a mountaintop. With more than 500 experiences, including games, virtual hangouts, and a home theater in your headset, there's something for everyone to discover. MetaQuest accounts are available for people age 13 and over, and new this year, parent-managed Meta accounts for preteens, which have age-appropriate protections. Starting at $499.99, MetaQuest 3 is a great value. Capture life's best moments with the high-tech camera in Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses that can live stream to Instagram and Facebook, plus stay connected with hands-free calls and messages, and listen to your favorite music with built-in speakers. For must-have tech gifts this holiday season, go to meta.com. Sponsored by Meta.
Kia America honors veterans by connecting highly trained former military technicians with meaningful new careers at Kia retailers through the Kia Veterans Technician Apprenticeship Program, VTAP. Launched earlier this year in partnership with Educational Resource Systems Incorporated, the program is a U.S. Department of Labor and GI Bill approved national apprenticeship. Kia VTAP provides master-level trained veteran technicians with career access to hundreds of participating Kia retailers nationwide. Eligible veterans may also elect to receive a substantial monthly GI Bill stipend during their 12-month apprenticeship. Greg Silvestri, Vice President, Service Operations.
Kia VTAP is delivering skilled and experienced military veterans to our retailers during this period of unprecedented record sales and growth. I'm inspired by the quality and tenacity of these veterans as we honor them and all military veterans who served in the U.S. Armed Forces.
For more information, visit KiaVets.com, sponsored by Kia America.
Hi, I'm Catherine Giudicillo. I have three wonderful children with my husband, Sean, who I met on the 17th season of The Bachelor. At just 5 months old, our son, Isaiah, became sick and spent 4 days in the hospital. At first, my husband and I thought he had a common cold, but it turned out to be much more serious. It was respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. RSV is the number one reason why babies are hospitalized. I'm sharing my story so other parents can learn about the importance of helping protect their babies from RSV when they are most vulnerable to it. If you are pregnant or plan on becoming pregnant, speak to your OBGYN or healthcare provider about the risks of RSV. As a mother, I've seen a lot of warning labels, from choking hazards to baby toys, and I wish RSV came with one. To learn more, visit www.bewareofrsv.com. That's www.bewareofrsv.com. This message is brought to you by Pfizer.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. having a bad hair day? Yep, a little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program. We got a couple of minutes left, though, wrapping things up here. Crime, of course. We talked about the violent rioters, so that's I guess that's crime of a sort, depending on who you ask. And I guess depending on who you ask and what they believe of the politics of the people who committed the crime. Because apparently that decides whether or not you're guilty or innocent. So it's going to be a big issue in the 2024 election. And, well, you know, you got a lot of places that went with the defund the police movement, and boy, did that not work out for a lot of areas, but people still vote for that sort of thing. I guess they think that they're better off as they live in communities with more enhanced crime, but it's not a recent phenomenon. It's not like the 2020 Black Lives Matter protests suddenly hit the defund the police button, and suddenly now we all know after that, oh, hey, we're worse off. We actually had evidence before of this sort of thing. In fact, it has a name, the Ferguson effect, where because of the public backlash about policing or whatever, whether or not it's well-deserved, you still have police perhaps more reluctant to enforce the law in certain areas of town, and which is just as bad as defunding the police. And as a result, crime increases. It doesn't go down. You know, you keep being sold this lie, oh, we defund the police and there's just this paradise that will spontaneously break out in all communities. That's not true. That's never been true at any point in human history, particularly not now. We're not much better than we were 1,000 years ago as people are. We have plenty of criminals, evil people among us as well, despite how civilized we pretend to be for the cameras, I suppose, and virtue signaling. But virtue signaling is, in fact, what this sort of thing is about, really. You know, the people who say, oh, let's defund the police, guess where a lot of them are? They aren't in the communities that are losing police presence. They're in gated communities. They're not going to be affected by this. They have private security. In fact, you'll recall, I mentioned it before, in Minneapolis, the city council, who voted to defund the police, at the same time, they voted to increase funding for their own private security. And then, of course, you have people like Congresswoman Cori Bush, one of those radical socialist congresswomen. She openly said, you don't need police, but she does, because she's more important than you. That's exactly how she put it. So it's a bit of narcissism there, I guess, and they just don't care about you, the people that put them in office. They just care about themselves and what makes them look good. And it looks great to defund the police, and you just hope no one notices that you have your own private police force on hand. And it's not just Minneapolis. We've seen that in plenty of other areas too. And like I mentioned, you have the gated communities with the private security and all of that. So it's just these people who say defund the police, you can kind of guess their income level, I suppose. Because actually, the folks in the communities that lose the police presence, a lot of them, it's actually not as much of a majority as you think, but it is a majority, do want police to be present in their communities. Now, they might have objections to what that policing constitutes, and perhaps rightly so. Perhaps there are areas where policing can be improved, but the majority of people, especially in the communities Democrats claim to, and the defund the police people claim that they're helping, they don't want to defund the police. They don't want to lose the police. They don't want to abolish the police. They want, if anything, more policing. They just want it done properly for their needs. And joining us now to talk a little bit about this and perhaps how Republicans can try to capitalize on this sort of issue in 2024, we have Micah Derry. He is president and CEO at the Adams Project. And Micah, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
Thank you so much for having me on. It's always good to be with you.
Yep, glad to have you. So how can Republicans effectively contrast their positions with Democrats when it comes to the whole defund or abolish the police movement? You know, and also, you know, they try to say defund the police just means rearranging money. It doesn't mean abolish police, but effectively it does.
Effectively, it does it for no other reason than perception. And you and I both know this. Perception absolutely matters when we're talking about the public, especially when we're talking about voters. So I think that the number one thing, and you really touched on it, is how do we talk about differentiation between the Democrats? And the good news is, it's not hard. The Democrats have gone to such great lengths to try to cater to and offend no one. And yet in the process, they have lost the narrative and they've lost track of what voters and Americans actually care about. And so at the Adams Project, we have been talking to voters all over the country. We've been talking to Republicans specifically, both through polling and through focus groups, trying to understand not only what do they believe the main problems are, but how do they think we should go about addressing them. The first and foremost thing that we learned was not surprising, and that is they want to hear their candidates supporting law enforcement. That's not a surprise. It's a given, even. However, the second piece also matters, and that is they want to hear candidates demanding accountability. Whether we are talking about the criminal on the street or if we're talking about a rogue district attorney who's not doing their job, or maybe even if we're talking about a law enforcement officer who has breached the public trust and has abused their power, voters across the board want to hear accountability being demanded by their leaders. The third part is the one that might be a little bit more surprising to people that don't work within the criminal justice policy space. But frankly, as a conservative that's been working on criminal justice policy for years, it was just about right what I've been hearing all over the country. And that is, voters want to hear their candidates focusing on rehabilitation. Today, we have nearly 2 million people who are behind bars in prisons and jails all over the country, and 95% of those inmates will be returning home at some point. It is critical that we do the best we can during that captive time to equip them with job skills and life skills so that they will make better decisions when they get out than what they made that landed them there in the first place.
Well, I can say that's actually from almost experience that is a definite unifying issue there, because I had a friend who's, center left just about, but he had a run in with the law, ended up in the prison system, and boy, some of these prisons were just ran so horribly and rehabilitation wasn't encouraged. In fact, the only way to get by in the prison was to become even more of a criminal, apparently, the way the management was encouraging everyone to fight against each other, I guess, so that the prisoners wouldn't actually unite to hold management of the prisons accountable. And there was also another bipartisan aspect to that. Any congressman he reached out to, Democrat or Republican, they didn't do any kind of investigation in the facilities.
You're exactly right. The captive time will get filled. When you have nothing but time on your hands, your time will get filled with something. It's the best investment by far for the taxpayers if that time is filled with the education opportunities.
All right, so where can we find out more about the Adams Project? We've got about 30 seconds left.
For all your listeners, feel free to visit www.theadamsproject.org. Learn more about how Republicans are leading on criminal justice policy.
All right, Mike Adair, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe Show today. And listeners, thank you for coming along for the ride this hour. And our website is mainstreetmedianetwork.com. We're also on social media, Gettr, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.